αγαπητοί συμπολίτες, θα ξεκινήσουμε και με το πάνελ εδώ πέρα. Έχουμε αργήσει λίγο. Θα ξεκινήσει ο κύριος Bill Weinberg. Bill, I'm thankful and grateful for your presence in our panel discussion, and I'm sure our Greek-American audience here feels truly obliged, right? Okay. Γιώργο, σε παρακαλώ να πετάξεις στο screen τη μετάφραση, τουλάχιστον τα βασικά σημεία της ομιλίας του Bill Weinberg. Λοιπόν, να ξεκινήσουμε τη συζήτησή μας. Έχουμε τον κύριο Bill Weinberg, που είναι παραγωγός του Radio Pacifica εδώ στην Αμερική. Έχω δίπλα μου από εδώ τον Κώστα τον Παναγιωτάκη, που είναι καθηγητής κοινωνιολογίας στο City University, και στο Queen's College ο Νίκος ο Αλεξίου. Εγώ φυσικά είμαι ο Νίκος ο Βαβλασόπουλος, πιο πολύ με γνωρίζετε. Λοιπόν, ας ξεκινήσουμε τη συζήτησή μας, για τους ώστε να μπορούμε στη συνέχεια να έχουμε τοποθετήσεις και ερωτήσεις με το Bill Weinberg. Bill, you can start. Here is your mic.
I'm extremely honored to be here today. And while I confess that I do not understand Greek at all, the visual presentation which we just witnessed makes a very appropriate prelude to some of what I want to say about the particular historical moment which we're faced with here in the United States. And I'm going to begin by invoking the old cliche that the Chinese character for the word crisis is made up of the characters for danger and opportunity. And there are both very real dangers and opportunities on the political landscape in this country at the moment. Ever since Reagan was elected in 1980, back when I was graduated from high school, the most reactionary elements of this in this country have been in charge. And the generation since then has seen a virtual gutting of the power of organized labor. It's seen the passage of the North American Free Trade Agreement and the ascendance of the World Trade Organization hegemony of the doctrine of deregulation, both as it relates to labor standards and environmental protection, as well as financial oversight. And finally, particularly as regards this last category, financial oversight, we saw the fruit of this policy in the economic crash of 2008, which I would say directly resulted in the historic election of Barack Obama. And a lot of us had some hopes upon Obama's election that there could be a clear break with the policies of the past generation, which had brought the country to this point, and that there could even be what we were calling a new deal. And this was sort of the hope that we felt. At the same time, there was a very obvious danger, is that the populist backlash to the crisis would be exploited by the right. And unfortunately, that has certainly happened. It's been exploited by the right, and there hasn't been any new deal. And for various reasons, Obama has failed to rise to an historic occasion, I would say. The backlash on the right is the response on the right, a real sort of a grassroots and populist element of the right wing, which has emerged in response to the crisis, has used two propaganda constructs. The first has been the scapegoating of immigrants for the economic crisis, and the notion that immigrants coming in primarily from Latin America, are stealing our jobs. And the second has been a fiscal conservatism, which holds that the problem is all these big spending liberals and too generous welfare schemes and this sort of thing, and the notion that primarily urban people are, through social welfare, are ripping off the hardworking, by strong implication, white taxpayers in middle America. And largely the anti-immigrant backlash has been exploited by groups such as the Minutemen and the people who passed this hideous law, which is in place in Arizona, and there's been copycat legislation in state houses across many states now. And the second propaganda construct, that of fiscal conservatism, has largely been the in the realm of the so-called Tea Party movement. But there's there's overlap here, and it's very interesting that the legislation, which was just introduced just last month, to actually change the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, was brought to us by the newly elected senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul, who is now the person in Congress who is most closely connected to the Tea Party movement and most openly and aggressively identifies with the Tea Party movement. Now, this is very sinister, the notion of amending the 14th Amendment. You know, it's very ironic that the Tea Party movement, obviously in their name, they implicitly invoke the American Revolution, and there's this whole sort of notion of getting back to the original intent of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers and so on. And here's the senator who most closely represents their movement wants to do away with, or amend, I should say, the amendment of the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, which actually instates equal rights. And of course, you know, as we all know, there were no equal rights in this country until the so-called Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th. The 13th abolished slavery, and there was the 14th, which said that everybody has equal protection in front of, before the law, and that anybody who is born in this country is a citizen of this country, because it had been sort of ambiguous up to that point and as to whether black folks were in fact citizens, regardless of whether they were born to slavery or freedom. And in fact, the Dred Scott decision found that as it was put by the Supreme Court in that decision, that black people had no rights which whites were bound to observe. So this was done away with in the 14th Amendment. It was actually the 14th Amendment of 1864, which 1865, which actually instated equal rights in this country, and it's precisely that which now legislation has been introduced to significantly weaken, and specifically to do away with the provisions for so-called birthright citizenship, the doctrine that anybody who was born on the soil of the United States is a citizen of the United States. And this is tied, of course, to the whole notion that there is a crisis of illegal immigration, which is in turn tied to scapegoating of immigrants for the economic situation which we're faced with in this country. Now, a very significant sign of hope, which we are witnessing right now, is the movement in Wisconsin, where now for almost exactly 2 weeks in February, and it gets bitter, bitter cold at this time of year in Wisconsin, they have been holding an ongoing protest vigil around the clock in front of the State House in Madison, Wisconsin, in response to, yes, indeed. In response to the efforts, as we all know, of Governor Scott Walker to gut the public sector workers in that state of their collective bargaining rights. Now, this represents the first time since Obama's election that the left has started to seize back some of the populist fire from the right. This is an extremely significant development. But it should also be noted that the so-called grassroots opposition to the genuinely grassroots movement, which we now see emerging in Wisconsin, has been spearheaded by none other than the Tea Party. And the counter protest, which have been organized to the big protest in Madison, and I should note that the counter protests have thankfully been quite small, but nonetheless they've been organized by the Tea Party, and in fact the Tea Party is this very weekend, as we're speaking here in Astoria, and as the protests are continuing in Madison. The Tea Party is meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, precisely to try to hash out what their response is going to be to apparently the rise at last of a resurgent labor movement in this country, as witnessed in Madison. And Madison could well be only the beginning, because there are Republican governors in several states, including Ohio, Indiana, and New Jersey, right across the Hudson River, where similar, you know, rollbacks of labor protections are being prepared and are being contemplated. So battle lines are being drawn in this country, and what makes the Tea Party so dangerous is this is something which we really have to keep in mind, and it's something which has really been evident in the 2 years of lost opportunity, I would say, since Obama's election, which is that if progressives don't mobilize against capital's attack, then the populist space, the populist political space, will be usurped by the right, which will wed its supposed stance in favor of the little man to forms which are easily exploited by the ruling elites: racism, xenophobia, and paranoid anti-communism, meaning the notion that even the extremely modest demands of organized labor, such as for collective bargaining rights, which have been in place for generations in this country, represent socialism, which, of course, they do not. Not that I personally feel there's anything wrong with socialism, but certainly those demands do not represent socialism. So this is a particularly dangerous moment in this country. We've got, even though we have a real glimmer of hope on the political landscape now with what's happening in Madison, we're also witnessing the potential. Now, there's an unfortunate tendency on the left to use the word fascism without a proper respect for what it really means, and to just use it as an all-purpose insult for anything we don't like. And I strongly warn against that, because it weakens the power of the word. But nonetheless, I think that there is something which is quite genuinely fascistic about the populist right element, which has been on the ascendance in this country since Obama's rise, represented once again by the anti-immigrant backlash and by the Tea Party movement and its fiscal conservatism. And the fact that they are now talking about actually amending the 14th Amendment, the one amendment of the Constitution which genuinely guarantees equal rights for all, would be the beginning of the actual legal formalization of white supremacy in this country. And that the most and the way fascism has traditionally worked is that the most reactionary elements of or the way it could work in this country, looking at the model of how it worked, in fact, in Europe in the first half of the 20th century, is that the most reactionary elements of the white working class and downwardly mobile middle class will get ethnic scapegoats and the promise of a nation purged of foreign contagions, as they are used to beat back the progressive elements of the working class, until such time as the left is thoroughly crushed and they are thrown overboard, as the populist element of fascism was, in fact, thrown overboard in the in the Night of the Long Knives in Germany in 1934. So the last thing I have to say is that the reason a lot of this sounds very alarmist, of course, is because the Tea Party is you know, invoking the American Revolution. It isn't invoking Nazism in its name and in its imagery and so on. And, you know, the United States fought the Nazis in the Second World War. So it is verboten in this in political culture in this country to, you know, explicitly call yourself fascist or to explicitly invoke the symbols of fascism. And ironically, there's even this notion, which is very popular on the right now, which is sheer revisionism and very dangerous, that that Nazism was a phenomenon of the left and of socialism. And which is why, you know, they say that, you know, Obama is Hitler, one of their favorite epithets that they throw out. So we have to be sophisticated enough to recognize what fascism could look like in America, even if it does not overtly adopt the guise and the symbols that fascism used the last time around in Europe 50 years ago. So I join you in your applause for the workers who are standing up for their rights and ours in Madison right now. And I have some words of warning, and I hope that I am being alarmist and paranoid. Thank you.